This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to www.ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, I'm here with Roger Corder, the Professor of Experimental Therapeutics at the William Harvey Research Institute in London. How are you, Roger?
I'm fine, thank you.
Excellent. You've just written a new book, The Wine Diet.
Yes, that's right.
How's it going?
Well, I think there's quite a lot of interest in the subject, and I hope that it'll be a bestseller.
Originally, it was due to be released, in sort of mid-January, wasn't it?
That's right, but the Telegraph did a serialisation that stimulated a lot of interest, and they decided to release it before Christmas.
It's about wine, and it's about food, and it's about staying healthy.
Absolutely. It's about combining moderate consumption of wine with good nutrition to live a longer, healthier life. I think a goal that we all aspire to, but sometimes we need some advice on how to achieve it.
What's the crux of the argument that you're saying?
Well, I think I need to take you back the journey I've taken. I started off as a wine drinker, and about 10 years ago thought, well, it's no good just drinking any old wine. I want to know whether one wine is the same as another wine in terms of its health benefit. And so I went down the road of purifying different polyphenols from wine to work out which ones had the most effect on blood vessel function.
Just before backup, polyphenols, do you want to just give us a quick overview of what a polyphenol is?
They're quite a diverse group of substances. Most of the wine polyphenols are flavonoids.
In a wine, what would be typically making up the flavonoid component?
Well, the main flavonoid component is anthocyanins and procyanidins.
Anthocyanins, they're the colouring, aren't they?
Anthocyanins come from the skin and they give the colour to the wine. Procyanidins come primarily from the seeds and they're extracted during the winemaking process. And they actually give the sort of tannin composition to wine. So a more tannic wine is a wine that's richer in procyanidins.
Tannins are them molecules that they have that bitterness in the mouth.
I wouldn't describe it as a bitterness. My feeling it's the astringency, so that you can have this mouth-drying sensation. That's due to the tannin components. Although we don't yet understand fully how these molecules cause that astringency, because we can find things like traditional ciders, which are also quite rich in the same molecules, the procyanidins, but they don't necessarily come across as astringent drinks. So I think we need to understand a bit more about taste so that we can create wines that are both rich in procyanidins and at the same time popular drinks to consume.
The book you've got, The Wine Diet, it's really about balance and moderation, isn't it? You're quite an advocate of wine drinking, but not necessarily in vast quantities.
Absolutely. I think that there's a few salient points here. One is that by searching the literature and studying what people benefited most from wine consumption, it was very clear that it was in a window of between 2 and 4 glasses a day. People who drank less than this were not appearing to get the same benefit as those who drank in this window, and those who exceeded this amount were actually more likely to suffer other illnesses and disease.
What are those benefits?
Well, the main benefit we've been interested in, and it's the one that can be characterised most readily when you're studying the effects of wine, is improvements in vascular function and a reduction in blood clotting risk, a thinning of the blood, if you like, so that you're less likely to have events such as a heart attack or a stroke. And most of the interest from a medical perspective, which is where I'm coming from, is to actually lower the risk of these disease occurrences, because really that's the most significant factor we can have in terms of improving people's well-being, is to actually give them recommendations for lifestyles that lowers the risk of heart disease. Because if you want to live a longer, healthier life, then the first thing you've got to try and do is cut down your risk of heart disease. I think the important thing about what I'm recommending in my book is not some abstemious lifestyle where you have no pleasure. It's about balancing pleasure with moderation in order to derive the best benefit from wine and some of the other things that I'm suggesting as alternatives to wine.
You mentioned heart disease, but there's other things going on there that you touch on in your book, such as diabetes, dementia.
Well, in some respects, these are connected. I mean, a typical healthy wine drinker is somebody who drinks in moderation and eats a good, healthy diet. If you don't have those habits, then your risk of having dementia is very much connected to your risk of heart disease. So a person who has risk factors for heart disease is also somebody who's more likely to get dementia if they grow older. And there's many other disease conditions that seem to relate to the same risk factors. For instance, blindness in old age, well, people would know it as age-related macular degeneration. That's the most common cause of blindness in old age. That also occurs more commonly in people which have risk factors for heart disease. In other words, overweight, lack of exercise, wrong sort of nutrition, aren't moderate wine drinkers. These seem to be all factors that if you drink moderately, if you exercise regularly, don't smoke, and are not overweight, then you can reduce profoundly your likelihood of both heart disease and these other conditions compared to somebody of the same age who has all these not beneficial habits.
I like the way you describe it, not beneficial habits. We talked earlier about the different types of molecules in them, polyphenols and procyanidins.
Yes, I was going to talk about my route to discovery of the importance of procyanidins. Do you want me to?
Go for it.
I've been a red wine drinker for many years. And towards the end of the 90s, I began to start thinking, are all wines the same? Does just drinking red wine, is that enough? Or are there particular types of wine that are better than others? And so the route to discovering that was to do analyses in the lab to find out which wines were most beneficial in terms of reducing heart disease risk and improving blood vessel function. So we purified from wine the polyphenols that had the greatest biological activity, and we found that these were all short, small procyanidins. And then we thought...
When you're saying short, you mean they're not big, long chains?
They're not the sort of big, long chains which get longer as the wine ages and form condensed tannins and eventually precipitate in the bottom of the bottle as a sediment. We're talking about what you find in a young wine that are fairly small polymers of flavonoids. These are the biologically active species or component, and it's well described in my book if you need to know more about this.
Good plug.
But what we were focused on was finding out what was important and then seeing if certain wine types were richer in these. And it was a sort of interesting road to discovery, where I was visiting places like Sardinia, where there was more elderly people, or certainly more centenarians than anywhere else in Europe. And then I did an analysis of the French census data and realised that in the southwest France there was more people living over 75, or more men over the age of 75 in the department of Gers in southwest France, and there was double the number of 90-year-olds relative to the population. Having worked out where the greatest areas of longevity were, I analysed the wines and found that the most procyanidin-rich wines in France were corresponding to these areas of increased longevity, which has the inevitable conclusion that if you want to get the best benefit from consuming wine, it's better to consume a procyanidin-rich wine. Now, procyanidin-rich wines don't just come from the Nuoro province of Sardinia and from southwest France. They come from everywhere in the world where people are using traditional winemaking methods that ensure full extraction of procyanidins from seeds during the winemaking process.
When you're talking about procyanidins, they're like the tannins, so you're looking at big, robust wines?
Exactly. We're talking the more tannic the style of wine, the better it's likely to be for you. And that means that the winemaker has to have a fermentation and maceration that includes a long contact time between the skins and seeds to get all these molecules extracted. And often that's the most important information you can learn about the wine in a bottle, because there's no quantity of polyphenols in the bottle, that there's very little other information. It might be an old vine wine is often better in that respect, because winemakers tend to make their best wines from old vines, and that may make a difference in the quality of the product that they're making. So you can find from most countries procyanidin-rich wines, tannic wines, that are very different from the light modern style of wine, which is fruity and soft, which is a popular supermarket wine, isn't necessarily one that's going to confer the same benefits as a wine from one of these more tannic origins.
So the type of wines you're talking about are things like those big Robust Cahors, maybe some Argentinian Malbec?
Oh, absolutely. Although when it comes to grape varieties, often Cabernet Sauvignon worldwide, Nebbiolo grapes in Italy, these are grapes that give you much more tannic wines than the sort of Malbec you're finding in the Cahors and the Argentinian wines. Nonetheless, Cahors wines and Argentinian Malbecs are often good choices, but on a comparative basis, Cabernet Sauvignons may do better. But really,
what's the best grape variety?
The most tannic grape variety is the Tannac grape variety. That's a fairly unique in France to the southwest area. In Cahors wines, you will find often a percentage of tannat is used. Uruguayan producers also use extensively tannat, and I understand it's grown in small pockets in other areas of South America. But it's not the most popular of grapes, because it does make a very tannic wine, which requires a skilled winemaker to make a good wine. And it also, for most people's taste, it may need to be aged in a way that the wine softens before it's drinkable. But I've got such a, you know, undiscriminating taste, I'm very happy to drink tannic wines with food at any time.
Yeah, I think there's two ways people deal with tannic wines. One is to let the wine age, and as you said, normally the polyphenols or the tannins clump together and form the sediment, which obviously you lose what you're looking for in the wine.
Absolutely. You've got to balance your taste against the benefit you hope to achieve. Now, obviously, drinking wine for pleasure is often the main focus of consumers. So it's really about, I think, in finding cheap tannic wines to eat with your meals regularly and save the more expensive wines in your cellar or wherever until they've aged nicely and are pleasures. There is a stage when they're 2 to 3 to 5 years old where they're still quite rich in procyanidins often, and the tannins aren't so noticeable. So it's achieving the right balance, the interaction you want to have with your bottle.
Often a bit of fatty meat is quite nice with tannic wines.
Well, let's say
Or cheese?
Let's say rare meat rather than fatty meat.
Yeah, okay. I was just saying, you know, if you're drinking the tannic wines to help yourself against the fatty foods, and then you're having to drink the...
I'm not advocating overconsumption of saturated fat. But I do accept that wine with meats is often a way of making the tannins more approachable.
In your book, you talked about cider being potentially quite good as well. You know, being a wine show, we're not going to dwell on it too long. Mm. But you did mention that the hazy, you know, Somerset ciders, you know, things like Scrumpy, are probably quite good in terms of procyanidins, but that the filtered ones aren't necessarily that good. Is that the same with wines? And what's going on there?
I think certainly when it comes to wine, if a wine is unfined and unfiltered, it's going to have a higher procyanidin level than ones that's been filtered to give it a long sort of shelf life and a crystal clear product. I think that we have to recognise that some of the old habits of winemaking, in terms of keeping the much in the way of tannins in the bottle, is probably something to consider. Although obviously, depending on where you were, you might have a refined approach to making wine, even traditionally using egg whites and the likes to fine wine.
What about other things to look for in a wine? Is things like climate or other things that you should look for a wine that might have lots of procyanidins?
I think one thing to look for is wines that say smooth or ripe or soft tannins. Those are the ones to avoid, because those are the ones that are often made with overripe grapes, which therefore have a lower procyanidin content.
Before. So ripeness is a big factor.
That's right. So those are the ones to get away from. But look out for wines that are said to be fruity but have a long tannic finish, because that often implies something with a bit more than a fruity, quaffable, light wine.
There's a quote that I've got to get in that I loved from your book. It was, wine is a food, a medicine, and a poison. It's just a matter of the dosage. What dosage do you recommend?
Most of the evidence from studies of wine drinkers suggest that it's quite close to what the government recommendations are. The difference seems to be that wine drinkers can drink slightly above that, provided that they consume their wine with food. However, for a man, that means drinking 3 small glasses or half a bottle of a wine is still pretty much the upper limit of what you should be drinking per day to derive the most benefit. For a woman, it's one to two glasses of small glasses. It's 125 ml glasses. Those are the levels to be aiming at. But food consumption with wine is very important to actually be healthy and derive the best benefits from wine. As soon as you start drinking wine without food, you put yourself at risk of various cancers on a long-term basis, but also on a short-term basis, your blood pressure is more likely to be increased by drinking wine always on an empty stomach.
Is that because the wine hits your bloodstream faster? Or
As far as we can tell, that seems to be the main factor. Excessive consumption of all alcohol is associated with high blood pressure. And if you have high blood pressure, then the first thing you should be doing is cutting your alcohol consumption and also exercising more.
Thanks very much for that, Roger. Do you have a wine tip for us today?
Obviously, I'm a man of moderation, although haven't always been. Important thing to note is that if you want to have the benefits of drinking red and white, then I favour the fact that vacuvin as a technology is a very effective way of keeping a good bottle of wine in the fridge, a white wine in the fridge, and having an occasional glass without feeling the need to drink the whole bottle.
Vacuvin, that's where you have a weak special cork and you suck the air out.
Exactly. You create a vacuum, cut down the oxidation, although I'm always concerned that if you apply too much vacuum, you extract some of the volatiles, and so you can damage the wine in other ways. But it generally, if you do it carefully, it's a way to preserve the shelf life of a decent wine so you can get more enjoyment out of it.
So you could drink a glass of white wine a night without too many problems.
Exactly.
All right. Thank you very much, Roger.
Okay, my pleasure.
Cheers.